Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. Last week's program was about why people, particularly those on the left, despise President Trump. And after giving some ancillary reasons, I explained that the primary reason is Trump's support for conservative policy. It's about Trump's policy, not his personality. And the point is not that President Trump or the Republican Party is perfectly Christian in all of their policies, but that any party or candidate that even moderately supports biblical moral positions will be despised by the culture of Sodom and Gomorrah. So those on the left really hate the president because they want abortion, they want LGBTQ rights, gender choice, globalism, big brother government, the elimination of certain property rights. And it's all being sold under the guise of oppression. That the Christian worldview, the Christian principles of government are oppressive. And in one sense, they are. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 26, the wise king winnows the wicked and drives a threshing wheel over them, but there is a righteous oppression and an unrighteous oppression. Imposing the principles and the responsibility of God's law upon a citizenship is not unrighteous oppression. So there is a culture war between the right and the left, between the biblical worldview and the secular worldview, between God's law and man's opinion. And this is the reason for all of the dissension in our nation. So now that we have those basic truths nailed down, let's talk about the lie that goes with this animus against God and against God's law. With the hatred toward the right, there has to be a lie to support that hatred. With rebellion against God also comes a lie. Satan just didn't come to Eve in the garden and say rebel against God. He came with a lie rationalizing or justifying the rebellion. And the lie makes evil appear good and righteous and beneficial. As George Orwell said in his essay about politics in the English language, 1946, political language is designed to make lies sound truthful, murder respectable, and to give the appearance of solidity to pure wind. And the basic lie or the premise of Satan hasn't really changed in the last 6,000 years. And the lie is that God and God's law are oppression. God is just trying to keep you down. And that oppression narrative is what's driving the left today. The Antichrist spirit in our day. If we understand the oppression lie beginning in Genesis chapter 3, we'll understand the ideology that's taken over our country and the whole world. Why do people believe this lie? Well, why did Eve believe the lie in the garden? Because the lie stokes our egos. It affirms our autonomy from God. It justifies our sinful actions. First comes the desire for sin, and then comes the lie to justify it. And the Bible speaks of this lie, not just as a single fib, but the lie is an entire false biblical worldview that we build. Mankind in his fallen condition has an entire false narrative that he's created concerning God and man and sin and redemption. And the whole world is under the power and the influence of this big lie. This is not just a reference to telling lies, as in the Ten Commandments, you shall not bear false witness. This biblical reference to the lie is about one's whole life, one's whole being a lie. Romans chapter 1, verse 25. For they exchanged the truth of God for a lie. What lie? Well, in context, an entire misrepresentation of God's character. For a better understanding of this biblical concept, know that this Greek word is pseudos, which means that which is false or fake or pretend. It's really no small thing that our president is talking about fake news. It's really the battle between two worldviews being exposed. This word, pseudos, is sometimes used in the Bible to refer to individual acts of lying, but it is often a reference to the big lie, a faulty worldview, a whole life of pretending, living a lie. As in Romans 1:25, people exchange the true view of this world for a fantasy view of this world. So either we have the right worldview or the wrong worldview. Also, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 11, for this reason, God will send upon them a deluding influence so that they will believe what is false, the pseudos. And in that text, the falsehood, the pseudos in view, is the entire agenda of the Antichrist. In Revelation 22:15, those prohibited from entering the kingdom of heaven are sorcerers and immoral persons and murderers and idolaters and everyone who loves and practices lying. Literally in the Greek, practices pseudos. And this is not simply telling black and white lies, but it's living a lie, living according to the elementary principles and the philosophies of this world. At his trial, Jesus said to Pilate that he has come to refute the lie. John chapter 18, verse 37, for this I have been born and for this I have come into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. Jesus came with the correct worldview. And everyone who has a heart for God's truth identifies and gravitates toward that truth. As Jesus explained to Nicodemus, John chapter 3, this is the judgment, that light has come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, for their deeds were evil. For everyone who does evil hates the light, doesn't come to the light, for fear that his deeds will be exposed. But he who practices the truth comes to the light, so that his deeds may be manifested as having been wrought in God. What a great text. And here's a strange thing. There are so many conservative pundits today. They speak about truth. They speak about being truth detectors. But they make no reference to Jesus Christ, nor to the biblical assessment of the situation. This 20th century secularism, where everything has to be said and done without God, is really a strange time. This world is a stage on which we show the disposition of our heart based upon which worldview we gravitate toward. Now, Pilate, being an evil man, responded, what's truth? He was clueless. He had no relationship with God, no moral framework by which to see the world correctly, just like so many people today. Ephesians chapter 4, they walk in the futility of their mind. They're darkened in their understanding. They're excluded from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them. So we are in a war for truth, or rather a truth war. Now, the point I want to make today is that in this election season, we are hearing so many lies coming from so many unprincipled, ungodly candidates. It's just amazing to watch. And God has put this all before us to teach us about the nature and the power of lies. Here's the lesson. When one has a wrong worldview about the bigger issues of life, one will lie in the particulars, in the specifics, without even considering it to be a lie. Living in the big lie with a wrong worldview results in telling specific lies. Specific lies are said to support the bigger lie, the false worldview. So let's look at some political examples of this. In the debates, both Joe Biden and Kamala Harris claimed that in reference to white supremacists, Trump said that there are good people on both sides. Harris said in the debate, he, on the issue of Charlottesville, where people were peacefully protesting the need for racial justice, where a young woman was killed. And on the other side, there were the neo-Nazis carrying tiki torches, shouting racial epithets and anti-Semitic slurs. And Donald Trump, when asked about that, said, there were fine people on both sides. Biden said, quote, close your eyes. Remember what those people looked like coming out of the fields carrying torches. Their veins bulging. They spewed anti-Semitic bile and accompanied by the KKK. A young woman got killed and they asked the president what he thought and he said, there were fine people on both sides. No president ever said anything like that. Now, this has been a talking point in the leftist media for a number of months, for years actually, but it's a complete fabrication. Back in August 15th, 2017, in a news conference, Trump began by condemning neo-Nazis and white supremacists showing up at Charlottesville. Trump said, we condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence. It has no place in America. Then the reporter went on to ask more questions about what the president thought about Charlottesville. Trump said, I will tell you something. I watched those very closely, much more than you people watched it. And you had a group on one side that was bad, and you had a group on the other side that was also very violent. And nobody wants to say that, but I'll say it right now. You had a group on one side that came charging in without a permit, and they were very, very violent. And here, Trump was talking about Antifa on the far left, and Richard Spencer's white supremacy group, Unite the Right, on the alt-right. The reporter asked, Mr. President, are you putting what you are calling the alt-left and white supremacists on the same moral plane? Trump said, I am not putting anyone on a moral plane. What I'm saying is this. You had a group on one side and you had a group on the other. And they came at each other with clubs. It was vicious. It was horrible. But there is another side. There was a group on this side. You can call them the left. You just called them the left. That came violently attacking the other group. So you can say what you want, but that was the way it is. The reporter asks, you said there was hatred. There was violence on both sides. Trump said, yes, I think there's blame on both sides. If you look at both sides, I think there's blame on both sides. The reporter says the neo-Nazis started this. They showed up in Charlottesville to protest. Trump said, excuse me, you had some very bad people in that group. But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides. I saw the pictures as you did. You had people in that group that were there to protest the taking down to them of a very important statue and the renaming of the park from Robert E. Lee to another name. So this transcript shows that it was very clear that Donald Trump was making a distinction between the bad people with clubs, Antifa and the alt-right, and the fine people on both sides of the issue of either supporting or not supporting the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. Trump was actually calling people who wanted to take down the statue fine people. And if there's any confusion, later in the interview, Trump restated his comments. Trump said, I am not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists because they should be condemned totally. But what did the leftist media and politicians do with Trump's comments? They lifted out of Trump's speech the phrase, there were fine people on both sides, and then claimed Trump was saying neo-Nazis and white supremacists were fine people. When in fact, Trump said continually in the speech that the neo-Nazis and the white supremacists need to be condemned. And Trump said continually, I am not referring to the neo-Nazis and the white supremacists as fine people. So the left made up a blatant, bold-faced lie. Why? Well, they want to smear the president with accusations of racism. They want to bend the truth to do it. Because the crime of racism is the only moral imperative left on the left. And it's an accusation in which they can get some traction. So they just accuse their opponents of racism or being motivated by racism. It's a diversion tactic so they don't have to deal with the issues. But here's a question. Are these media people sitting in a smoke-filled room saying, yeah, we know the president did not say neo-Nazis and white supremacists are fine people. But we can put a spin on it and make it look like he's a racist in support of white supremacists. Do these leftist politicians and these activists know that they're deliberately lying? In the debate prep, did Joe Biden and Kamala Harris say we need to use the accusation that Trump said white supremacists are fine people? Actually, if you look at the two debates, their language was almost identical. But did they say, yeah, we know this is a fabrication, but the people are going to believe us and the media will support us so we can get away with it? Really, do they know they're lying? Or is their worldview so twisted that they actually believe their own lie? That they're actually think that they're telling the truth? As Jesus said, they're the blind leaders of the blind. I've been asked this question quite often. Are the lies deliberate? Or is this something that happens in the subconscious? And my answer is yes. It's both. At some level, they know that they're lying. But because of their worldview, they've suppressed their conscience in this matter. Let's just not be naive. We need to be careful not to superimpose our own values upon other people. And since we would never tell a bold-faced lie ourselves, sometimes we think other people would never do the same. But people are liars. Jeremiah chapter 9, verse 3, in the prophet Jeremiah's day, they bend their tongue like a bow, and lies and not truth prevail in the land. For they proceed from evil to evil, and they do not know me, declares the Lord. Also, Romans chapter 3, the indictment against all mankind. There is none who does good, no, not one. With their tongues, they keep deceiving. James O'Keefe and his organization called Veritas just did some undercover videos of Democrat campaign leaders in Colorado. And they caught a party insider, Christopher Jacks, saying, I am going to do everything morally acceptable to win. I will lie. I will cheat. I will steal because that's morally acceptable in this political environment. We need to remember that those people on the left are mostly secular humanists, and they don't operate on Christian ethics. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in God's law. Instead, they believe that the ends justify the means. So lying is not wrong if it helps their cause. And since they believe their party is the good party fighting for moral freedom, they will lie if it results in their win. Lying's justified. Barry Weiss, the writer who just left the New York Times because she was bullied by colleagues for taking some conservative positions, last week wrote the following about the motivations of the left. And I find this to be quite interesting. She writes, the new creed of the left goes something like this. We are in a war in which the forces of justice and progress are arrayed against the forces of backwardness and oppression. That's the left view of the right, backwardness and oppression. And in a war, the normal rules of the game, due process, political compromise, the presumption of innocence, free speech, and even reason itself, must be suspended. Indeed, those rules themselves were corrupt to begin with, designed as they were, as it were, by dead white males in order to uphold their power. So the left believes they are so right in their worldview that the normal rules for telling the truth and reason don't apply. You know, just like in World War II, the United States put out disinformation to fool the Nazis. The left today thinks it's acceptable to put out disinformation because they are in a war against the evil forces of the right. So the left doesn't play by the rules. They will make up bold-faced lies. Now, the right generally stays within the truth because the right ideologically believes that the only way to win is by the truth. However, after making the case here that the left knows that they're lying, it's also true that those who are steeped in a false worldview so interpret the world through that false worldview that the individual lies look like the truth. And you know, the left is actually right about people making up their own reality. But they're wrong in concluding that that means that there is no true reality, claiming that everything's a social construct. When you come to realize that people have different worldviews, either a theistic worldview or a godless worldview, there are two conclusions you can make. A, there must be no objective truth because people disagree. Or B, there is an objective truth, but something's wrong with mankind. Because of sin, people want a worldview that fits their moral darkness. And so they believe falsehood. A is the secular answer. B is the biblical answer to the differences in people. And this is what I really want us to learn in today's program. The power of the wrong worldview to cause people to lie in the particulars. To cause people to see falsehoods in the particulars as being true because they support a false worldview. I recently heard one commentator say it this way. Those on the left believe their ideas are so virtuous that any falseness, any lie, is just a technicality. Well said. So, in the case of the president's comments about Charlottesville, the left would say, well, if you want to be technical, Trump didn't really say neo-Nazis are fine people. But let's not be technical. We don't have to be technical because we already know he's a racist, and so we can justly read into his words. Besides, he must be a racist because how else can we explain his conservative policy? Anti-abortion, anti-LGBT, small government. It all must be because he's out to oppress people. It must be because the right just wants power. And in their worldview, the only explanation that makes sense is racism. So everything their opponents say, they consider it to be a dog whistle for racism, and they believe they just need to bring that out. When one believes a false worldview, one will read one's own opinions into other people's words and actions. Prime example is Adam Schiff, the congressman from California, when he made up a completely fabricated version of Trump's phone call with the president of Ukraine. Schiff did this because the words of Trump in the actual phone call did not indict the president. So Schiff had to supply his own version of the phone call for people to see it his way. Schiff later claimed it was just a parody. But what he did was a great example of how self-deception works. One actually hears and thinks different words from what your opponent is actually saying. And now Adam Schiff is claiming that the emails on Hunter Biden's laptop were planted there by the Russians, when he has absolutely no proof of this. He just believes it. He just makes it up out of nothing because that's his worldview. Even when the FBI has verified that Hunter Biden's emails and the laptop were not planted by the Russians. But Adam Schiff lives in a fantasy worldview. During an interview with Tucker Carlson, Glenn Greenwald, a leftist journalist, said about Schiff, he is the most pathological liar in all of American politics. Shelby Steele, conservative black professor and commentator, just put out an hour and a half documentary called What Killed Michael Brown. The left says Michael Brown was killed because of racism. Shelby Steele in this documentary shows that it wasn't racism. It was Michael Brown's own dysfunction, that the black community is going nowhere until it begins to take personal responsibility and stop blaming others. But one of the themes in this documentary is how the left makes up their own reality about what happened to Michael Brown. The false story that he held up his hands and said, don't shoot, that the officer gunned him down while he was trying to surrender, that this was an assassination. It never happened that way. Michael Brown was caught on camera robbing a local grocery store, assaulting the owner. The police were called to investigate. Officer Darren Wilson spotted Michael Brown. Brown reached into the police car, started punching the officer, trying to take his gun. Outside the vehicle, Brown charged the police officer, and Wilson had to shoot. It's always a tragedy even when a criminal has to die. But many people didn't like the fact that this black man was shot. I mean, who wants people to die? But rather than blame Michael Brown for his sin, like what we used to do years ago, people today will blame the police. They will blame not the sinner, but the law for their problems. So the story became Michael Brown was an innocent victim of racism. In this documentary, Shelby Steele calls the lie poetic truth. It's a nicer term for the lie, but Steele is trying to bring out the fact that people make up their own story, their own narrative, their own poem to express their feelings, how they want the world to be in their own minds. And I would add that the way people want the world to be is really based upon their spiritual character. Whether they are the poor in spirit that Jesus talked about in the Sermon on the Mount, or whether they're self-righteous. Well, here's Steele's quote from the documentary. Why is it so hard to see the truth here? The story of Ferguson is quickly shaped by what I call poetic truth. This is a distortion of the actual truth that we use to sue for leverage and power in the world. It is a partisan version of reality, a storyline that we put forward to build our case. For example, that Michael Brown was executed was a poetic truth. The game is a competition between the objective truth and the poetic truth. The poetic truth is argued that America was so intrinsically racist that it would execute an unarmed black teen for merely jaywalking. This is the America hands up, don't shoot was meant to protest. Poetic truth always conflates the present with the past. It overlays the present with an imagery of past racial persecutions. So the biblical lesson is this. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 2. The hypocrisy of liars, seared in their own conscience as with a branding iron. People in their sin will make up their own reality. They will hear the words and actions of others through their own reality, and hence they will tell lies. And as far as they are concerned, they are telling the gospel truth as they believe it to be. And we need to be so careful with this, not just in politics, but in our own personal lives, in our churches, in our marriage, on our job, where we might be justifying a lie because the lie must be true since it fits our preconceived opinions. And as Christians, we should never be like this. Remember the false prophets in the Old Testament, Jeremiah 23? They were convinced that they were hearing from God and that their message was true. But as the prophet Jeremiah had to continually say to them, they were prophesying lies. They were totally convinced that they were telling the truth, but they were telling lies because they had a false view of this world and a false view of God. Two subpoints here. First, just because a liar doesn't know he is blatantly lying because he's deceived with his false worldview, biblically, he is in no way exonerated from the guilt of that lie, because he is still guilty of so loving a false worldview that it leads him to be telling falsehoods in the first place. Liars who are unaware of the full evil of their lies are still the people described in Revelation 21:15. Those who practice abominations and lying, who will never enter into the New Jerusalem. And a second observation or subpoint, both political parties do this. But the left is far more engaged in lying. You know, how can we be sure of this? Maybe this is our own bias. Well, if words mean what words mean, and the Bible is authoritative, we can be assured that the biblical worldview is not a fantasy, but it actually aligns with God's reality. And we know that the left violates clear biblical mandates and injunctions, and hence the left is continually misrepresenting the truth. As a Christian, as a believer in God's word, I am not going to say there is a moral equivalency between the two parties. The worldview of the secular state, the worldview of Sodom is a lie, and the Christian worldview, one nation under God, is truth. It's right. So don't be fooled. It's very simple. Who is keeping God's commands? 1 John chapter 2, verse 4. The one who says, I have come to know him, and doesn't keep his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. Or 1 John chapter 4, verse 6. We are from God. He who knows God listens to us. He who is not from God does not listen to us. By this we know the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. The test is, are they following the words of Scripture, the apostolic message? Here's another example of the hypocrisy of liars. I started reading Kendi's book, How to Be an Anti-Racist. And in the introduction, he states as unrefutable truth, six lies against President Trump. Number one, that President Trump said laziness is a trait of blacks, which is a statement that even PolitiFact says Trump never said. Number two, that Trump defames Latino immigrants as mostly criminals and rapists. Number three, that Trump promises a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States. Number four, that Trump routinely calls his black critics stupid. Number five, that Trump claims immigrants from Haiti all have AIDS. Number six, that Trump calls white supremacists very fine people. Each of the statements made by Kendi are either outright lies or misrepresentations of what Trump actually said. But in Kendi's worldview, this is what Trump meant to say. So here's a book that has stamped a New York Times award, but it doesn't even tell the truth in making its case. Kendi probably sincerely believes that he is representing Trump correctly. Because again, those on the left believe their ideas are so virtuous that any falseness, any lie, is a mere technicality. Another example, as I mentioned last week in a recent U.S. News and World Report article, nearly half the country, 48%, think that the Republican Party has been taken over by racists, a view held by 80% of Democrats. And concerning the Democratic Party, nationally, 44% think it's been taken over by socialists. And 82% of Republicans share that opinion, according to the study. So 82% of Republicans and 44% of the public think that the Democrats have been taken over by socialists. Is that worldview a fantasy? Or is that the platform of the Democrat Party? I'll let you decide.
Let me just ask, is anyone else on the stage concerned about having a Democratic socialist at the top of the Democratic ticket?
I'm not.
Now, that poll also said that 48% of the country and 80% of the Democrats believe that the Republican Party has been taken over by racists. Is that true? Are Republicans saying in their party platform that they're for white supremacy? No, but the narrative, the worldview on the left, is that every conservative policy is based on racist motivations. That's been the propaganda on the left, calling their opponents racist when their opponents are against homosexual marriage or abortion or open borders. And this accusation of racism behind all biblical law is the teaching of critical race theory that has worked its way into the population. Here's another example of this false worldview being spread. CNN, Brian Stelter, did an interview with a Harvard professor, Yochi Benkler. And Stelter asks, you say the Republicans are in an electoral dead end. What does that mean? Professor Benkler responded, for 40 years, the Republican coalition has basically been money focused on deregulation and lower taxes. Funding a party where the votes come from the white identity voters' backlash against the civil rights movement and the fundamentalist backlash against the feminist movement. So you have this coalition, and it keeps becoming more and more constrained as it starts to feed off of Rush Limbaugh and Fox News into its own extremism. And so what you have is essentially a party that cannot expand beyond its base. Well, notice how this Harvard professor views the world. He explains the right's desire for lower taxes not as Christian people desiring to stop the formation of a bureaucratic leisure class, people who make their living off of the power to tax rather than actually making goods and services. That always ends badly. But in this professor's worldview, he believes the desire for lower taxes is an attack on the civil rights movement. And the Republican Party is simply a backlash on the feminist movement, code for abortion. But what's really happening here is that the left, in their false worldview, ends up lying about the biblical Christian worldview. Here's another example of how pervasive the lie has become. In the first debate, Donald Trump was asked to renounce white supremacy. Why would the moderator even ask this question? Well, because the questions asked are themselves truth claims. The narrative believed and being pushed is that President Trump is a racist, so he needs to be the one denouncing white supremacy. Even though before this debate, Trump is on record as having denounced white supremacy 19 times. The media wants to ask the question to peg the president as a white supremacist who needs to denounce his ways. Notice Joe Biden wasn't asked to renounce any white supremacy groups because that's not the narrative. They want the problem to be on the side of the right, not a problem on the side of the left. But Richard Spencer, probably one of the most prominent neo-Nazi leaders today, and the one who organized the Unite the Right march in Charlottesville, has endorsed Joe Biden for president. Because the alt-right is for the socialism of the Democrat Party. But Biden wasn't asked about this in the debate. Why is Richard Spencer supporting you? Because that can't be the narrative. There can't be any racists in the Democrat Party. That doesn't align with the worldview of the left. And in this town hall meeting last week with Trump and Savannah Guthrie, Guthrie again asked Trump to denounce white supremacy. And Trump again was dumbfounded by the question. Trump said, I did denounce white supremacy. And, you know, I listened to that previous debate, and Trump did denounce white supremacy, but the headlines in the New York Times the next day was, Trump refuses to denounce white supremacy. They heard only what they wanted to hear. One's worldview affects how we interpret the facts. And if we have a false worldview, we're going to lie about the facts. No wonder Jesus said continually, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. Because so many people don't have ears to hear. So after Trump told Savannah that he did condemn white supremacy, she had to concede, but then she had the nerve to say, but you still hesitated.
Like, I denounce white supremacy, okay?
You did 2 days later.
I've denounced white supremacy for years, but you always do it. You always start off with a question. You didn't ask Joe Biden whether or not he denounces Antifa. I watched him on the same basic show with Lester Holt, and he was asking questions like Biden was a child.
Well, this is a little bit of a dodge.
Are you listening? I denounce white supremacy.
Okay.
What's your next question?
Do you feel, it feels sometimes you're hesitant to do so, like you
hesitant.
Wait a
You do think I'm beautiful, don't you, Charlie Brown? You didn't answer me right away. You had to think about it first, didn't you? If you really had thought I was beautiful, you would have spoken right up. I know when I've been insulted. I know when I've been insulted. Good grief.
So in her worldview that people on the right are racist, she hears hesitation in Trump's voice, not because he's offended by the question, not because the question itself is unjust and outrageous, but she believes that hesitation must be a sign of racism. So in conclusion, what we're learning from the 24/7 media is that people believe and spout lies because they first believe a false worldview. Because they don't love the truth. They don't come to the truth. They exchange the truth for a lie. Therefore, as it says in Romans chapter 1, they become futile in their speculations and their foolish hearts are darkened. May God give you a love for the truth. May you have discernment to detect the lies and their sources. Continue to stand for Jesus Christ, because you'll know the truth and the truth will set you free. May Jesus Christ reign.